Welcome to the Urban Complex, a system of interrelated, emotion-charged ideas, feelings, memories, and impulses. This name takes the definition and lays out what a listener should expect. A podcast where ideas, feelings, and memories collide, leading towards meaningful change. I'm co-host Chris Richardson. Please enjoy the journey with the Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
All opinions by Chris Richardson, Dominic Poppin, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Arizona State University, the Arizona Department of Education, or the Arizona Commerce Authority. Any endorsement of or messages from sponsors are solely supporting the production of this podcast. There is no relationship further than podcast purposes with any sponsor unless separately created with another entity. Enjoy the Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
Hey, Chris, here we go. Another week. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. If anyone sees this little scruff, I don't normally shave when I'm on vacations. And so here I am filming. I'm actually in Silverdale, Washington, where I grew up.
Oh, nice.
I'm at the Best Western Silverdale Beach Hotel. And it's having a great time here with my family. And show must go on. We got to film. So
I love it.
Yeah, they're trying to kick me out too. So it's kind of funny. I'm using a conference room.
That is the complex part of filming podcasts, right?
Yeah, gotta find a place to do it.
Let's see. I think it was about like 106 here yesterday or something like that. What's it like up there?
Oh, it's great. About low 80s, high 50s, low 60s at night. We're out on the water every day. You can see a little bit of color. My kids are learning to water ski. It's a blast. They're out picking crabs under the rocks out on the beach here at the hotel. So,
That's awesome. All right. Well, now I'm just jealous. I got to escape from the scene. So let's jump to the podcast. Who we have on today?
Yeah. So we have Joshua Edmonds, Director of Digital Inclusion at City Detroit. Pretty amazing. We found him through Artie Tannen, a previous guest, and it's pretty cool that partnership. She opened some doors, and I know this topic fits near and dear to what you're doing and then what I'm trying to do now at the Department of Education. Yeah. with bringing broadband to homes and improving tech in schools. So do you have any ties to him? I also know he's from Cleveland. Who knows? I wouldn't be surprised if he knows Lev. Lev knew everyone there. So.
Well, when it comes to digital equity, digital inclusion, Lev pretty much knows everyone. I'd be surprised if he's not connected. But yeah, I think Josh and I have, been at similar conferences. I've actually probably talked on panels together. He's got a reputation, phenomenal leader, phenomenal activist, just phenomenal everything. I'm really excited, especially because digital equity, digital inclusion, connectivity, digital literacy, it is the hot topic of the day because of COVID and in the remote learning environment we now find ourselves in. So I think for city managers, mayors, CIOs, Department of Education CIOs, this is going to be a great episode. Shall we bring them on?
Let's do it.
All right, here we go.
Support for this episode of The Urban Complex comes from Worldwide Technology.
What if we could connect people to new possibilities, turn thinking into a way forward, solve problems before they become a problem, and share the future with everyone? We can. At WWT, we connect businesses to technology to make the impossible possible, to reach better decisions faster, to accelerate progress. Together, let's make a new world happen.
All right, Joshua, please let Dom and I give you a warm welcome to our podcast, Urban Complex. Thanks for joining.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're excited. Well, we found the best way to kind of build relationship with our guests and our audiences just to start with who you are. So what do you want the podcast audience to know about you as a person, your background? It's really interesting. You've had an interesting path. Make sure to highlight, that you were a campaign manager, that you were part of the Housing Authority. We really haven't had representation yet on the podcast. So it sounds like you have a lot to talk about. So please, and we'll get to the City of Detroit and what you're doing with inclusion soon.
Absolutely. So one, I am from Cleveland, Ohio. I actually was born in Painesville. It is a very Mexican-American community. I moved to a high school called Twinsburg. And through there, after doing that, I actually went off to Notre Dame College in Ohio. I was an English major. And while I was there, I thought I wanted to be a teacher. And then I actually spent some time in the classroom and said, no, not for me. So then transitioned to doing some nonprofit work throughout the community, went off to grad school, studied technology policy. After that, I worked for then Senator Mike Johnson out of Denver, Colorado, looking at immigration reform. And then came back to Cleveland to work at that housing authority while jointly serving as a campaign manager for a city council race. And while I was at the housing authority, I worked on President Obama's Connect Home initiative. And that's really where this digital equity stuff started for me. And I mean, technically could have started earlier because I was working at Best Buy doing tech support then, but I didn't realize that that was digital inclusion at the time. I was just manning phone calls. But after my stint working in public housing, it kind of opened up my eyes to say, wow, the nation really needs to take a much more serious look at this digital divide. I don't think they're treating it, you know, with the level of nuance that it needs to be treated. And so after that, I transitioned to working in philanthropy at the Cleveland Foundation, specifically investing in digital equity ecosystems. So how do we think in an ecosystem-wide capacity, and how do we convey investment confidence to then support the scaling of digital equity interventions? And that experience really taught me, one, how to do fundraising and how to essentially vet potential interventions. Because when you have money, everybody says yes. Everybody has an idea. And I learned that very quickly. And then after that, that's when, I made the move to Detroit to really get my feet wet within a municipal government. So as I'm touching these various different entities, the thing that I kept seeing that was missing from the equation was municipal government. The federal government will have their stance. Obviously, I said I was working on President Obama's Connect Home initiative. So the federal government, you know, they knew it was an issue. Public housing authorities or libraries, I mean, we were investing in them. They knew it. But municipal government was still dancing around the issue. And so the fact that Detroit raised their hand first and said, hey, we want to be the first city that's going to hire and house a director of digital inclusion, that meant something, especially given the socio-political landscape here, and which exacerbates our digital divide here locally.
Wow.
Well, it's interesting. So I work for someone from Cleveland, and Dom worked with him. Lev Gonick, I'm not sure if you run across him.
It seems like of course.
I have a funny feeling you know who he is. All roads seem to lead through Lev, especially if there's any tie to Cleveland.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, that's great. Lev literally, we worked together on a number of things. When I was working at the Housing Authority, Lev was working for an entity called Digital C. Digital C is doing incredible stuff right now, and Lev actually planted that seed. And so, yeah, it's of course, Lev's behind it.
Yeah, so he's my boss at Arizona State. He moved from Case Western out to Arizona, and he's doing a lot of work with digital inclusion with Dom and connectivity and broadband. So, yeah, it's funny. And then also, we have a little bit in common. I was once upon a time Master's of Arts in Teaching. I was going to be a teacher too, so I can relate to why you're not there as well. But the funny thing is, I'm now the CIO of the Arizona Department of Education, so I have to figure out how to help figure out, get the connectivity to schools and help build some of the best tools that they have and programs. So we have a lot in common there.
Cool. Absolutely.
All right. So that's great background. Why don't you bring it up to the current role? Tell us about what it is, what you're doing at City of Detroit, what Director of Digital Inclusion means, and kind of where you're focused.
Yeah. So honestly, when I first was considering this role, our former CIO, Beth Niblock, who is now the CIO for HUD, she was the one who brought me in, and we joke about the story that I turned down the role 3 times. because one, while yes, I wanted to see how municipal government worked in the context of digital inclusion, I didn't want to leave that. I actually just wanted to be like, yeah, it'd be great if I could support that. And so the first time I turned it down was really from there. Second time I turned it down, I'm like, well, no, I'm going to come into this ecosystem. I'm going to be a bit invasive. This should be a Detroiter. And then the third time I said no, it was more so from the standpoint of y'all are going to just look over my shoulder the entire time, and I'm not going to be able to do what I want to do. And they're like, no, you can do what you want to do, because this was the caveat. I didn't have a budget when I came into the city, so $0, and I didn't know anyone, and it was a staff of one, me. And so like all these, you know, different factors.
Let's hope you didn't negotiate it that way.
I honestly was more so looking at the standpoint of, all right, if I'm able to get in there And if I'm able to use my philanthropic lessons learned and use some of those lessons I learned from the public housing interventions, I'm like, yep. I might be able to carve something out. Yep. And I was thinking of carving something out of the city budget. That never happened. Right. But that being said, you know, my role is really, and definitely at the onset, was on, I would say, empowering people to think more expansively about some of the social issues facing Detroit. And that could be the same thing if you put me in any city, I'd be doing the same thing. And the reason being, a lot of your folks here already had expertise as it relates to poverty, as it relates to truancy with schools or whatever other, you know, ill you want to zero in on. And so what I was able to do is say, hey, all those things that you all are focusing on, the digital divide is that underlying line on every single thing you all want to touch. I'm like, try me. Someone give me something that it doesn't relate to. And so I was honestly going to every single church you could think of, going to community groups like crazy. I'm going to block clubs. I'm just talking to people about this digital divide. And then someone finally started saying, okay, that's cool and all. We get that it's an issue, but what's the intervention? You know, what are you doing? And that's when I really started kicking into overdrive and started fundraising like crazy. Just meeting up with funders saying like, hey, I know the background. I'm not coming here to spend your money like recklessly. I know where we need to go. There's a North Star here. We need to build an operation. And so when I said operationalizing the digital divide, it was because if you look at the cycle of poverty, how it's always present and it's always churning out, you know, terrible outcomes, then you need to have a cycle of digital inclusion that can counterbalance that. And so the first order of business was actually bringing a national refurbisher to Detroit, and that was Human IT. So Human IT collects technology, refurbishes it, and redistributes it to the community. The reason why they were the first, I would say, piece of this operational puzzle is because they're tapping into existing business practices. So if a business is already going through their technology every year or every other year or so, that's a sustainable source built off of an actual business process. Because the biggest issue with digital inclusion and why municipal governments don't want to get behind it, because it's very unsustainable. Like it is incredibly. How do you get technology, in many cases, expensive technology and resources and help to people who can't afford it? And how do you do that sustainably? It doesn't make sense and it doesn't work. And so for me, I had to really, really overcorrect on things that could be more sustainable. So tapping into those business processes. In addition to that, I had to really present myself as an expert and, you know, someone battling imposter syndrome. That wasn't easy. And so I had to keep saying like, no, I know this stuff. I have binders and binders and binders on my desk. Like I probably read every book there is a read on the topic right now. And with that was me protecting myself against someone trying to like jab and saying, well, you didn't know about that. So therefore you're not, you know, worthy to receive the funding that you're asking. So in January of last year, I think that was a pivotal moment where the Democrats had called me and asked me if I wanted to testify in front of Congress on the matter of digital equity. And that was the most terrifying moment of my life. I'm not even lying. No exaggeration. I thought I was going to embarrass everybody. I was a nervous wreck. I remember taking the Metro in the morning to the Capitol. And I was just praying that the train was going to break down. I'm like, oh, can't make it. Like I tried and then darn it, transit. But it didn't happen. And I ended up going there. And it actually worked out well. Was able to testify with Gigi Sohn, Angela Seifer. I forgot the other woman's name from the American Enterprise Institute, but you know, we were actually able to make the case. Now remember, I said January of last year. That's pre-pandemic. So it almost seemed pretty prophetic with what we said there, that if the government is not going to act on the matter of digital equity, then us local communities are going to be devastated by this digital divide. And so then fast forward to March, everything shuts down. It's almost like, wow, like you guys were really there. And so like my role at that point was on the federal advocacy side. Now I'd already mentioned us on the fundraising stuff. I already mentioned me doing all this community building, whatever. And so cut to March, that's when we actually stood up a very, very bold program called Connected Futures here. And that program, we were able to raise about $23 million of private capital. And got, you know, every single public school student in Detroit, a computer, internet access, and technical support from Human IT. And so the fact that I brought them to Detroit before this happened makes it seem like, wow, you guys are just overprepared. So if you're listening to the jobs I'm mentioning here, strategizing is literally one of the jobs I had to do the most, because I had to use like some type of predictive analytics to say, at some point, something's going to give here, and I need to have this thing ready to go. And it was ready to go, seamless handoff. And so now, fast forward to where we are today. No, we built this entire ecosystem called Connect 313. And what you're going to see in most communities across this country, you'll have a Digital Inclusion Alliance. San Antonio has one. Charlotte has one. Yeah. A lot of communities have one. I'm sure, you know, Phoenix has something similar like a Digital Inclusion Alliance. Mm-hmm. And what we took that same alliance approach and said, let's give it structure. Let's not have people just bonding over goodwill and saying, like, yep, we care about bridging the digital divide. Like, that's fine, but where's the power? The power is in organizing. And so we've organized this Connect 313 community to say, if you are a resident that has an idea that how we can bridge a digital divide, we've actually created our own fund out of that. Thanks to Quicken Loans, and I know Quicken is out in you all's area as well. Quicken Loans has been an invaluable partner. They actually have taken the proceeds from the Rocket Mortgage Classic, and they have pledged those proceeds to establishing that Connect 313 fund. So every single year, since last year, this year, and next year, we've been receiving about roughly $2 million a year from fundraising from that golf tournament. And wow, that golf tournament now has stood up that fund, which has allowed us to be significantly more agile and build out a legitimate funder based board, where now we have a board entity that's comprised of Quicken Loans, Microsoft, United Way, there's so many more, the Pistons. I'm not going to name them all because there's a lot of them. But we said, anyone who touches the digital divide and who has resources, you now are on our board. And then we have an entire community group, such as five different committees that are pushing the work forward. And we facilitated an entire community election. So now, as people are saying, well, Josh, what's your plan to bridge the digital divide? What's the community's plan? And how can I support that? And, you know, most recently we received about $40 to $45 million for our ARPA dollars specifically for digital inclusion. Most of your communities are getting $5 to $10 million. And so the fact that we're getting that much money, you know, now all my fundraising talks in the past now make it seem like, oh my gosh, like, you know, you got exactly what you said you were going to get. And so as we're looking at what's coming down the pipeline, I'm doing my best to stand up the necessary infrastructure. We set up a call center for the emergency broadband benefit. And so we have a local call center here, whereas a lot of people are directing their folks to the national federal communications call center. We have one set up here locally to protect Detroiters and say, no, we know what's best about this program. We can route you to support accordingly. So I sit at the middle of all this, and I'm doing my best to strategize, fundraise on one hand, be a federal advocate on the other hand, and strategize like none other. And I think this role has really transformed from the me knocking on doors to now us knocking doors down. And awesome. It's a really great position to be in.
I absolutely love it. I mean, that's so many great pieces of advice. And I think we're going to double click on a lot of the things that you mentioned there, especially how to organize, how to structure, because you're right. I think without the governance model, without the process in place, you're just chasing your tail. So before we start to double click, you know, this is a Smart Cities podcast. We have a little bit of fun with each of our guests, asking them for their kind of definition of smart cities, because as we know, there is no one definition. But we would love, I think, to kind of hear what your thoughts are on what is a smart city, especially with the angle of digital equity, digital inclusion. You know, what's working in your mind with smart cities, what's not, and how is kind of what you're doing, the approach you're taking through digital inclusion, kind of impacting the smart city? And then we're going to deep dive into the structure, because I think there's a lot of advice to be had for the structure that you've set up.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, the smart city crowd, it's one of the most interesting to me, because you have so many people who are like reading the same books and somehow coming up with a different definition every time. And then insert the folks who then took the discussion to, we're not a smart city, we're an intelligent city. I'm like, oh my goodness. But I think for me, I think a smart city is a city that can apply learning. And I'm actually going to, when I'm saying learning, I mean data too. So it's not even just like anecdotal learning, but a city that can apply learning to make better decisions and to be more responsive. And so that's kind of like high level, and how that distills down into the digital inclusion conversation. I think that what smart cities are suffering from is the lack of not them being innovative. I think it's more so the lack of risk that we can take on these. Because when you're dealing with data, and you're dealing with data as relates to the public interest, that's when things get weird. And we know that. And I don't think that we've had a long enough runtime for us to be as risky as we should be. So a lot of the interventions that sometimes are coming up that I feel bad, I mean, you know, God bless vendors, but man, I feel bad for them, because it's like you're essentially trying to take some of these really, really small market cities that some of us have never heard of, and you're saying, oh, this is what we're doing in this city that you've never heard of. And we're like, okay, what are you doing in any of these larger markets? And yeah. I think when you look at the context of digital inclusion, if you have cities like a Detroit and now like a Baltimore and now like a Philadelphia, where you are seeing very bold digital equity stances, that same boldness has to permeate with the smart city concept. And I don't believe people are giving smart cities a fair enough chance. I think a lot of them are just writing them off because, unfortunately, again, a lot of small market cities are doing it. But we need to see much more boldness on the smart city front, and a city to literally say, we are committed to being a smart city. And what that means for us is exactly this. And yes, we are a very large city. We know that, and we're committed to that. Yeah. And I think that level of boldness is really what's needed to actually drive the smart city conversation forward. And then with that, we're able to get the actual risk-taking that's needed to then be deemed as, wow, that is innovative. And not just innovative, it's effective. Yep. And so for us in the digital equity conversation, you saw this is the same playbook that plays out. We literally hired a director of digital inclusion. My parallel universe is they hired a smart city director. And then off of that, that smart city director spent an entire year building community, showing use cases, saying, this is what you do. This is how you do this. This is what happens when we don't do that. And just committed, not unwavering. And then off of that, then that same smart city person is able to get the ear of funders to allow them to be much more, to allow them to take the risk that we need. Then
especially the type of funding that takes it away from the normal city funding. Like what you did brilliantly with the inclusion community built and fundraising is you built a whole mechanism that allowed you complete autonomy in a way, right? You had your own board, and you allowed the risk to kind of be, did the risk be perceived by the city as kind of separate to the city because this board was doing it and not, yeah. And I think that's what I was queuing in on listening to you, because you actually created your own space. You helped the community create the space and it didn't feel as risky to the city.
I think precisely. I have had so many things that because Connect3&3 is its own entity, has its own system of checks and balances, has its own reporting, own accounting, everything. The city, I don't have to touch money now. The money can flow directly to that. So now what am I bypassing? I'm not doing RFPs. I'm not going in front of city council for this stuff. It completely bypasses it. And it's not because I don't respect those processes, but it's because the name of the game right now is speed. If I'm able to stand up things faster and faster and faster, I then am able to then have that megaphone to the federal government and say, hey, this is what we're doing today, and this is what we will be doing tomorrow, and then the day after that, and the day after that. And the same type of mechanism has to be built for smart cities to really take off. Otherwise, your cities are going to do what they're doing now, which is, well, we have some light poles. It's like, okay, sure, but I mean, like, there's so much more.
So true. So true. Well, this is, I mean, Josh, this is brilliant. So let's dive into a little bit of this. So, you know, we talked about how it's a little bit outside, but let's dive into a little bit of your role within the organization, because, you know, a lot of our listeners are CIOs, city managers, even mayors, and they're trying to figure out, how do we do this? How do we set this up? So talk to us a little bit about the kind of internal structure. You just mentioned how the other part of it's more external, but when they brought you on, when they set up your role, talk to us a little bit how it's structured internally. If people are wondering, how do they do this themselves in their own community? How does your role play within the organization, especially within the Department of Innovation and Technology? I kind of love if that's how you say it.
Yeah, no.
You mentioned they were coming for you, but like, how did they carve out the role in the first place, I think, is where we're queuing in.
So this is the greatest way. What they did, because at the time, there wasn't money in the budget internally for the city to actually carve out a random role that, one, no one ever heard of, and two, like, had no budget. They're like, this is an empty position. Why would we do that? So, because Detroit is a Knight Foundation city, the Knight Foundation actually stood up and said, hey, we'd be willing, because we're all about, Knight's history is all about the access of information. And so they're like, we realize that the digital divide is inhibiting our core mission. So if we had one person that would just wake up and go to bed every day and just relentlessly think about this, we'd be willing to pay for that person. And the reason why they put it within city government is because they knew that city government would have the power to mobilize. We see the biggest footprint of our entire community. We see everybody. And so that's why the Knight Foundation stood up and said, we'd be willing to put up money for that person for 2 years. Now, this is what's even more funny. The University of Michigan Ford School of Public Policy is who housed me. And so this is the weirdest thing. I actually had two titles. So with the Knight Foundation through University of Michigan, I was a digital inclusion policy fellow with the Poverty Solutions Initiative. Externally to them, I was the director of digital inclusion for the city of Detroit. And so most people only saw me as a director of digital inclusion. They didn't even know about this whole other fellowship thing. And so what I would say, if any community, and trust me, they weren't breaking the bank on me. So don't think that they were paying me a lot of money for that.
But the University of Michigan, that was the vehicle to allow the funding to move too, right? The exactly. city couldn't have taken it directly from the Knight Foundation anyways.
Gotcha. Bingo. So, and that's why I'm saying it's very agile. And I would strongly implore funders as well as municipal leaders who want a position like mine to go that route, because within 2 years, I'm able to demonstrate results. So I was able to say, hey, look, this is how much we've raised. This is what we've been able to do. You think that if Congress is showing an interest in what we're doing here, that you shouldn't? Like, it doesn't make any sense. And so, like, at that point, once the case was already proven, what that 2 years time did was it was enough time to convey the investment confidence needed to take funding from the city budget to support my office now. And so now I actually have a deputy. So I'm like, team of two, like we're getting there. But it really started from that initial donation from the Knight Foundation through the University of Michigan. And I would say that internally within the city, yes, I report to the CIO. They have me on the executive team here. And while a lot of my work is definitely external, the internal piece of that is, you know, I still have to go in front of city council. I still have to explain what we're doing. I still have to work across
every single... Which is the tie back to the city, which is great. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. And like, even me working with departments. So I still have to work with our department workforce, because as we're doing IT upskilling, that touches both of us. So I'm
What does Michigan expect of you?
University of Michigan? Really me to do this job well.
No pressure. We'll give you the money. Just don't mess it up.
I think a lot of it had to do with, how can I drive scholarship? How can I drive research? And so on their side, I was a part of a number of NSF grants for them. I was doing something very similar to what I'm doing internally to the city here, which is reaching across academic departments.
Yeah. So a lot of the money you referenced earlier that funded the program that created the 313 and then the ARPA funds, that was what they were looking for, is that the money would flow through that, or did it go directly?
So no, that money did not flow. They didn't get any of that. No offense to them. They didn't. But what they did get, though, was not only did when I go in front of, you know, the congressional hearing, like I referenced them like exclusively, like, hey, I wouldn't be able to do this without them. So like they're getting that notoriety. In addition to that, I did a digital inclusion summit my first year. That summit, I'm putting them on center stage. Like they were literally up there talking about their work and what they're doing. In addition to that, I leveraged their data team for our map making we had to do for our advocacy. Like I said, I just reached across even at U of M to look at the health informatics lab and looking at telehealth. So we did a telehealth grant last December, had about 8,000 seniors that we were able to connect to telehealth opportunities. That's stemming from the health informatics like work at University of Michigan. So I was leveraging them for their university expertise and prowess to then be able to drive our thinking as it relates to our federal grant applications.
And for our city CIOs listening out there, was it Beth Nidlock, the CIO of Detroit, that had the relationship with University of Michigan that knew kind of how to kind of navigate that and get the relationship with Knight and all that?
So Katie Locker was the former Knight program director for Detroit. Katie Locker and Beth Nidlock were really good friends. Gotcha. And so as they were strategizing around the digital divide, because it's near and dear to Beth's heart. Beth has always talked about the digital divide. Now that she's at HUD right now, don't be surprised if you see something bold coming out of HUD around the digital divide, because that's just the type of person Beth is. Even on her door, it would read JFDI, which I'll give you, just do it, and you can guess what the F is. but that's how she thinks. And so when she's like, look, I'm not going to sit up every single night and think about this. I'm just going to get it done. Katie, Knight, we need to get this done. And then Katie said, great, University of Michigan's doing a lot of great work around their Poverty Solutions Initiative. I believe that digital inequity is also a symptom of poverty, and we need to address that. And so that's how that all came together.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, that's a perfect story. We've had, you know, some university leaders on. We've obviously had city managers on. But I think the way you just described it, and the fact of how you're able to, one, get the city connected into the university, but more, get the university and all the innovation, I mean, all the things you just mentioned, to actually impact the communities. Because oftentimes, the universities want to impact their communities. They just don't know how or who to speak to. And so the fact that you can play that role in bringing the best of the best into the community, help make that impact, that's phenomenal. You know, I think anyone that's listening to this will understand what this next term means just by what you've been able to discuss so far. But let's hear you talk about it a little bit more. Entrepreneur, you call yourself that. I think people will understand from just hearing what you've been able to stand up yourself internally in your role, will understand what that term means now. But talk to us a little bit about what you mean by being an entrepreneur.
So, yes, that is on my LinkedIn profile, so I'm laughing. I am a career entrepreneur, in that I love going into organizations and standing up ventures, so to speak, that transform the way we work. Yep. And honestly, every single thing that I've done and every place that I've been, I've done something like that. And it took me a while. Entrepreneur was kind of a newer thing for me, because I'm like, what is that? Like, it's not just a fellowship that I'm doing anymore. This goes all the way back to even when I was in public housing. One of the things I stood up there was a housing hackathon. And I didn't really think much of it at the time. I was like, but I literally sat, you know, public housing residents next to tech developers, and we did this together. And like, that was something that I didn't, in retrospect, I'm like, wow, like, oh, cool. But like, at the time, I'm like, no, it just makes sense. And that thing, you know, it got picked up by HUD. All these people were like, wow, this is great. When I was at the Cleveland Foundation, I remember I did a data visualization art equity project where I'm like, oh, we can use data to transform the way we think about accountability in the community. Again, that didn't exist. And just bringing and ideating and being bold into the thinking, that transformed the way that they were thinking about data locally there. And then obviously in Detroit with this Connect 3 and 3 stuff, no one said create Connect 3 and 3. No one said fundraise for all this stuff. But it was more so me just saying like, hey, like, if I did this as an entrepreneur, I know that road is going to be very arduous, and there's a number of variables that I don't know to be true, or I don't necessarily know about. However, on the entrepreneur side, I can go within this organization. I can leverage the assets as it relates to the branding of the city of Detroit, as it relates to the megaphone. I can leverage then those assets to then be able to fundraise the vision that I know to be true, for the to put in place the mechanism that I know is actually going to take us to where we need to go. So, it's something where I would challenge and implore more people to think like an entrepreneur, which pretty much that is like, you're going to think in an entrepreneurial way. You're not really going to have the structure that you want to have. I said in the very beginning, no budget, I didn't know anyone, and no staff. So it's like, wow, the entrepreneurs are like, yeah, that sounds about right.
Create my space.
So then, you know, using that same way of thinking, it's like, okay, I can either be completely destroyed by this and just complain and say, well, I didn't have this, I don't have this, or I don't have, like, or I could leverage the assets that I see fit, and I can build the thing that I know that, one, we can control that. We can now control the outcome of, if I need a fundraise for X, or if I need community partners to solve for Y, we can do this through this entrepreneurial thinking, opposed to me leaning on a bureaucratic governmental process that is really going to more so try to control outcomes that they can see. Whereas with Connect 3 and 3, it being external and you have all these different partners, as long as the vision and the mission doesn't change, I'm good with our outcomes there.
Yeah. I absolutely love that mindset. I mean, that is the smart city. That is how things are going to get done in the world today. We can always think of a million reasons why we weren't successful, But I mean, that's no fun. Why not have the entrepreneur mindset and say, let's go figure this out. I absolutely love that. And I think hopefully we'll get more people into local government that think the same way and apply that kind of mindset. So I absolutely love it. So, you know, as entrepreneurs, a lot of this can't be done alone. You need great partners. And you've already mentioned throughout this podcast, a lot of partners that have kind of helped you along the way, whether it's Quicken Loans or even the University of Michigan. Talk to us a little bit about the importance of partnerships in your role with digital inclusion. And please, you know, if there's any other partnerships you want to highlight or the results of those partnerships, even if it's talking again about Quicken Loans, please talk to us, because obviously there's city managers, mayors out there trying to do this, trying to understand how do they do it in their communities. And I think partnering is a key tactic for them to use.
I can't overstate the value of our partners here. They have been incredible. And incredible. If I could swear in this podcast, I would, to say how great they have been.
Feel free.
But, you know, with them being so incredible, I think that what city folks get wrong so many times, they think that the partnership structure revolves around them, that I'm the mayor, so therefore, that turns people off. They don't want to work with you then. And so the reason why we've been able to have success fairly quickly and the way we've stood up ourselves is like, it doesn't revolve around me. It revolves around the work. And I know that if I am General Motors, who's also a great partner of ours, who's investing in electric vehicles, who wants to hire Detroiters, they know that they need to be hiring Detroiters who are on the right side of the digital divide. So therefore, they need to be a part of a mechanism that gets people on the right side of the digital divide. So again, that's not revolving around me. That's not revolving around the mayor. That's revolving around the cause. And and I've told every single partner at the table, feel free to be selfish. I'm okay with that. Like, let's not, you know, make this so unrealistic and so flowery. No. The world is ruled by self-interest. And I know that. They know that. So therefore, as I'm looking at some of our partners at the table, if you want to hire Detroiters and you need tech-savvy Detroiters, be selfish in that. Invest in a way that allows you to hire the people you need to hire. And in addition to that, I can't stress enough, there's a gentleman by the name of Warren Flood. Warren works for Microsoft. He might be one of the smartest, not even might, he's the smartest person I've ever worked with. The guy is brilliant. And when I'm working with him, a lot of it is on the data framing, as well as like the larger organizational structure that we set up. Warren, you know, recently or previously worked in the White House. This is a guy who gets organization. And as we're looking at data modeling, and I can't stress this enough for smart cities, for anyone who's trying to do any work at the intersection of community and technology, the emphasis now needs to be put on longitudinal data. Now, I'm not necessarily a data whiz. I'm not, never have been. But that being said, my partners are. I'm not necessarily the greatest educational advocate, but my partners are. And so I would say that what I do really well and what I know my role within this partnership structure, I'm the megaphone. I brag about the work that everyone's doing, and I'm doing my best to set the vision and set the mission and the strategy that then brings out the selfishness in a good way of my partners. And so I would say that the city, they don't need to over-index on their role, because that's what sometimes what they want to do. And it's like, we all see through it. Y'all really don't have money for real to commit to this anyway. So I don't know why you're masking that you do that. You don't need to do that. Know your stuff. Know the residents that you serve. Know the outcomes. And then articulate that shared vision that people can get behind and do it in a bold way. Like, there's so many people in these digital inclusion or community technology ecosystems that are going to articulate a budget that is not even, it's so insignificant. I'm like, if you believe your issue that you're facing is a $500 million issue, then say that. Don't piecemeal and bring people along and limp them along with $50 million or something like that. Say what it costs. And I think that level of boldness and transparency and honesty, that has been the bones for our partnership to stay alive. It's been challenging at times. It has not been easy. It takes endurance. So for everyone who wants to build a sexy thing within year one, that's fine. But can it stand year two? Can it stand year three? Can it stand when people are pulling out?
Any advice for listeners when you have this great vision, it's tied to the common cause, but then the groups want to make it transactional. You know what I mean? Like they get to the where the document gets created and they want to bring it down to the transactional elements, which takes away, which often takes away from the intent of the partnership. Anything there? I know that's a little bit.
No. And that has happened here.
That has been happens everywhere.
as soon as you start talking about money, people got weird. It's like, all right, y'all are getting weird again. I think what I've been really harping on with every single one of our partners, the minute that stuff starts coming up, it's like, look, y'all, let's bring it back to the work. Let's get reoriented. Let's get realigned. And
you just recalibrate back to what the vision is and why.
Every single time. We have safeguards in place. So our safeguards in place are, one, every Tuesday for over a year now at 8 a.m., we have been meeting every Tuesday. We have a core group of people from every single organization that is part of our core group. We all meet every morning. That is our management strategy team. No one is bigger than that team. And that is something where we've had very tough conversations. This past week, we had a tough conversation about the perception of, hey, this stuff is getting slowed down over here. What the heck is happening? You know, we need to move this faster. What are you all doing? We're having these conversations as if we're part of one organization.
And that actually makes a ton of sense, because if you bring it back up, the people that are trying to, like the procurement specialists, they're often a few layers deep. You bring it back up, and you know what? Now that I think about it, you're right. They start to say, wait a second, if my leadership isn't going to accept this, I'm going to have to create a creative solution too. So they become an entrepreneur too. Yeah, it's interesting. Okay. Great.
So it's literally a band of us all working together. And it's funny because it's like, yeah, I work for the city, but this whole structure and all these people, like we're all working for the same organization there too, which isn't the city, but it's a part of the city, just like it's a part of Microsoft, a part of United Way, a part of Quicken. Like, we've all given of ourselves. And so it behooves us not to see any of these things through, because it's like, now it's all, we're all wearing the same jersey here.
Yeah, I love it. Great.
All right. Well, we do ask kind of a common question as we wrap up the show. Is there anyone you're particularly appreciative that you'd like to recognize on the journey at this point? And of course, if, as you've learned about Dom and I and what the Urban Complex is about, if there's any of those same people that you think would be a great fit for the show, we'd love to hear a little bit about that, and maybe we'll get them on.
Okay. So I have a lot and I'm going to forget some. So I'm like, oh, this is going to be horrible.
No pressure.
Well, obviously you all already mentioned Lev, so I don't have to give him any, but there's a gentleman by the name of Leon Wilson, who's also in Cleveland. Now Leon is from Detroit originally, but Leon is the CIO, CTO, C-something-O of the Cleveland Foundation. Right. And he's been leading that digital equity work for, I would say, a little over 4 years now. And he's just been a phenomenal resource. He actually kind of got my mind right when I was thinking, in some ways, I wouldn't say too big, but too unrealistic on partnerships. And that's how I was able to learn the lesson through him. That
Wait, you've been reined in?
initially, yes, because like I was just like,
you had to bring it smaller to start. I was like, wait a second,
we can do this. We can do this. We got money, and it's just like no. Like, not all money is good money. Like, slow it down. Leon Wilson, fantastic resource. He has an incredible mind. And he gets this at a level that most people don't. In addition to Leon, Francella Ochillo at Next Century City, she's executive director. Francella, I tell everyone, is my big sister. She is just always there. Now, she doesn't have a problem calling me out when I don't do something right or I'm not responsive or whatever. But at the end of the day, the way that she operates within Next Century City is fantastic. She's behind a lot of folks getting elevated at the local level. She'll never say that, but she is very, 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 very bright in her thinking, and the way that she's been able to transform how Washington, D.C. thinks about this, she's fantastic. In addition to her, Gigi Sohn at George, I mean, everyone, a lot of people know Gigi. Gigi is incredible. She's just someone who also has had my back in a lot of things and has helped frame a lot of the way that I think. And I know I already mentioned him before, but again, I'm re-mentioning Warren Flood from Microsoft. honestly, when I did that congressional hearing, I was on the phone with him the night that the Democrats called me to like 2 or 3 in the morning, just freaking out. I mean, this guy literally has a young family. So you all know, like, that's not the easiest to do that. But I mean, I was freaking out. He actually went to bat, got his government affairs team on the phone that next day. It was a Sunday, and Microsoft's government affairs team was on the phone, and they were helping me understand their data that now I reference in our congressional hearing. So, I mean, advocates like that are invaluable. I mean, I already mentioned Beth Niblock. She really believed in me from the beginning. I did not think that our work was going to manifest in this way. And she's forcing me still to think a lot bigger and a lot bolder, and also to be effective and timely, because I can hear her snapping her fingers like, Josh, come on, where are we? And I'm like, you know how to snap your fingers at me. But it's something where I know where it's coming from, and I've just been inspired by her leadership ever since I met her.
Awesome. Wow. This is awesome.
That's great.
This is, yeah.
All right. Well, with that, we'll have to get you back. I'm sure you've got more coming, and we'll check in. You know, we'll definitely hopefully see you at the Smart City Expo. I think that's how we connected through Artie. But with that, the Urban Complex gives a big note of thanks to today's guest, Joshua Edmonds, Director of Digital Inclusion, City of Detroit, Department of Innovation and Technology. Josh, it's been amazing. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot.
No, thank you. This has been great. I could do this all day, so I appreciate it.
We'll have you back.
The Greater Phoenix Economic Council, known as GPEC, was named the top economic development organization in the U.S. in 2020. As a data-driven regional organization, GPEC serves as a strategic partner to companies across the world as they expand or relocate to other markets. Over the past 31 years, GPEC has fueled the Greater Phoenix economy by helping more than 850 companies and creating more than 154,000 jobs. Leaders in Greater Phoenix are building the nation's most innovative and connected smart region through The Connective. This community-driven applied research model deploys technology at scale. For more information about GPEC, visit gpec.org.
All right, Dom. Well, man, that was Joshua. What'd you think?
Oh, I mean, so many incredible things to pull out from that conversation. I mean, I told you what his reputation precedes himself. What a great leader. I mean, what a great spark. What a great entrepreneur. Absolutely love that part of it. I think our local governments need more entrepreneurs. I mean, I just love how he was able to describe the structure and the role that he plays within local government and how they organize it in a way to, you know, put him in a place to be an entrepreneur within local government and have him go stand up his own kind of organization, structure, programming that sits outside of local government, but leverages the local government assets in order to make it successful. So,
he operates like you and I. Like, he doesn't let the definition or the role define him. He looks for how am I going to navigate to get the result and build the ecosystem, and kind of that think big but start small and get moving, and then bring people along with you. And because so many people, if they were got, they would be pumped to get the role, but they would then say, well, I have no resources, I know people, I have no dollars. People aren't, they throw their hands up in the air. I can't do anything. Yeah,
exactly. No, I think that is such a phenomenal piece of advice for cities everywhere. And then the fact that it was kind of like preceded or pre-funded, what, a couple of years, maybe 1 or 2 years from the university for his role there. I think it was phenomenal. Maybe cities everywhere should think about that. Maybe partnering with the foundation or university to seed fund that role, let him be successful. And then that gives you the justification for general fund dollars to actually, you know, kind of cement it within your organization. I just love it. You know me, I'm a fan of the public-private nonprofit partnership that sits outside that can drive innovation forward. Love everything that he's doing. What about you?
Yeah, I like how it sounds complex to people about the structure, but I love that someone had the foresight to know the mission of the Knight Foundation and know that if they aligned it to university of mission and created the role, the money could flow. And they knew that if they had, you know, that's the brilliancy of this just creativity. So the CIO at a city, and by the way, hopefully this isn't taking too offense to some of our people out there, but a lot of CIOs are very insular. They're insular city focused. But this city, the city CIO of Detroit, Beth Niblock, knew She had a relationship with the university. She had a relationship with the Knight Foundation. She knew how to align interests, create the role, and got the right person even. And then all this happens. So that to me, you know, I love how you focus on, you know, you've always looked at the structure and the mechanisms. And those are so important, right? That we've always said it's not about the tech. It's how you structure it. So it's tech, people, and process. And there is just such a, you know, masterclass on how to structure it and how to get the right individual there that's going to create the avenue. He even knew. He knew what he was good at and he knew what he wasn't good at. And he talked about that a few times. So I thought that was really important.
Yeah. I thought it was powerful. Again, you know, if you're building something for long term, you've got to operationalize it. You've got to sit down and think about the governance model, the partnership model. And that's what he's done well, right? This is, you're not going to see this digital inclusion for Detroit come and go within the next year. This is something long term because he's done such a great job at setting it up for the long term, focusing on, again, operationalizing it. So that's great. Go ahead. Yeah.
No, just one last thing before you jump into the Cogstone payment. I also thought that the ways by which the partners, I mean, you dug into that. They found the right partner for the right role. And I also think it's really important to ground the team in the vision and keep engaged. Too often I see the vision gets set. It gets passed down to the group to make it happen. They're scratching their head. Oh my gosh. This is what we are told by this individual. How are we going to make that work? We have to follow this procedure and this thing. And I love how they kept it aligned, and that helps navigate. I just think that when you get to the transaction level of a partnership, that's when it blows back up. So you got to keep it high. I thought that's a really important piece to highlight too. And I've seen that work well at Arizona State. I've seen that work well with our partners with, you know, external, the ones that work, we were able to do that. So I thought that was a great part to highlight too.
Yeah, loved it. I think he said something that I found interesting along those lines. It's like, you're allowed to be self-interested here, but let's be honest, it's all about the same cause. You want to hire Detroiters. You need these Detroiters to be tech savvy. Yeah. So it's ultimately going to help you in the long run, but we're all, you know, driving towards the same end of, you know, upskilling, empowering all Detroiters, because they might eventually be your workforce in the future. So this makes sense for all of them. I just love that aspect of it because it's, you know, we're having the same conversations. Intel's investing heavily in our efforts here in Arizona. And it's, they say the same things. Well, we want the next engineer to come from the tribal community or the refugee community. So we need to help empower them today so they become the Intel engineers of tomorrow. So I think that's a very powerful part. So shall we move to cracks in the pavement? I know you've got a good one for us.
Let's do it. I just remember we talked last time about Department of Transportation at the federal level. Well, here's one at a state level. The article is Indiana DOT and Purdue developing wireless EV, electronic vehicle charging for highways. Just think it's powerful that here we are, you know, groups like Tesla and then the non-Tesla folks have had to do it either at the malls or along, you know, at stops. Well, here now, a state realizes this is important to their state, and they're going to find ways to invest and make this at stops that they have ties to it, the DOT. I just think it's really showing that we need to get ahead of this thing. The EV is coming, and the momentum is just shifting.
Yeah, this article is incredible. It amazes me the brilliant minds that are out there in the world. I mean, what's he saying, Chris? Is it necessity is the mother of all innovation or something like that? I mean, there's so much conversations that I sit in right now talking about how are we going to deploy the infrastructure for EVs to be successful? Well, we're not going to have the infrastructure until the cars are there. Well, the cars won't be there until the infrastructure there. And it's just
totally.
And then all of a sudden they're developing roads that will just charge the
Success begets success too. It's a lot like our guest today, right? Joshua found a way to get moving, create some community, but have the vision, and they found groups that get started in the train rate. Everyone wants to be part of a successful piece, especially when it goes back to the vision of why they started it. For the EV movement, it's to shift away from the carbon side and the believers had there, but it's also a great experience too. You know, I ended up buying a Tesla and it's amazing. And so, and I had an i3 before that. So I've been a believer, but it's not just you know, it's not necessarily the green thing for me. It's also amazing performance. And now with this, it just makes it more practical.
Yeah.
In a world where we can navigate nationwide. And this is just a big step. So this is a big part of what the urban complex is about too.
Totally. And I think to tie back to Joshua again too, it's cities understanding their roles and being mouthpieces. You know, we don't need to be the ones developing this technology, but we need to be the ones convening and being the mouthpiece for it. So great article. Awesome. All right. Another successful week on the podcast. Joshua was amazing. Look forward to more conversations with him. But yeah, good one.
All right. Well, that's a wrap here from Silverdale this time. All right. Yeah. Take care, everyone.
See you back home.
See you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to The Urban Complex, smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow. Please find us on where you listen, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. We do love your feedback. Let us know if you have ideas for guests or questions to air on Cracks in the Pavement via social media. The Urban Complex is found on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. Or just shoot me an email, chris@theurbancomplex.com. Till next time.